Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
You know, I'm amazed I can remember them exactly.
Dr. Kevin Lehman on Focus on the Family Minute.
And they came in the office, and they would fight like cats and dogs coming in. You sit there. They're paying me the long green, you know, to be their helper here. And finally I said to them, this is about the second or third occasion, I'm not sure which one. I said, you know what? We're done. No charge. You guys are done. You guys go figure out if you really want some help. And when you really feel like you want some help, you come on back. We'll see what we can do. I just left it like that. And they did come back. We actually, that was a successful marital change. But you have to get behind your wife's eyes, gentlemen. You have to get behind your husband's eyes and see how they see life.
You can hear more from Dr. Lehman at FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
As the markets have their ups and downs, real estate remains one of the most stable assets in everyone's portfolio. Hi, this is Cindy Mims, owner broker of Colony Mortgage, voted best mortgage company in North County 3 years running. We offer conventional FHA, VA, and reverse mortgages and 100% purchase loans for first-time home buyers. Are you a builder and tired of the red tape when dealing with banks and expensive hard money loans? I have a great new option. Or are you 62 years or older? You can possibly eliminate your monthly mortgage payment and get cash in your pocket. At Colony Mortgage, we have hometown service with competitive rates. We have years of experience with creative financing to find that right loan for you. If it's credit issues stopping you, let us help. We move from our 20-year Atascadero location and now offer two convenient locations to meet personally in Atascadero and Paso Robles. Call 805-466-3598. Thank you for supporting your local businesses.
Hi, this is Heather Bourdain, and I am excited to announce that I've joined Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers. I was born and raised right here in beautiful San Luis Obispo County. I have over 20 years of experience in the insurance industry, and I'd be happy to review your current program. Every day I work with contractors, farmers, garage owners, restaurant owners, and more. I would love to hear from you. I can be reached at 805-540-3900 or heather@adlerbelmontgroup.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi on AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM. Phone lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. California Free Talk is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. And now, Free Talk California on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back from Thanksgiving break. I hope everyone had a wonderful dinner, good times with family and friends, and minimal political fights, hopefully. Although those have become, apparently, a beloved tradition. My mother was actually saying that when she was little, she remembers the adults in her family sometimes screaming at each other over politics, while the children were in the other rooms, not really paying attention. So if you did scream over politics this Thanksgiving, you were just carrying on a longtime tradition, I guess. I guess it isn't new after all. Anyway, I am very excited today to be joined by my friend Morna Desmond. She was working on a state Senate campaign in San Francisco. She came on the show before that election to talk about it. And she's going to come on and talk about what she learned and observed about California's political process. So looking forward to that. But first, some news. And I'm actually going to start with some national news. Really interested in anyone's take on this. This is what is roiling the Beltway, which is that President Joe Biden decided to give his son, Hunter Biden, a blanket pardon going back 10 years to 2014 after assuring the public that he would not pardon his son. And the reports coming out of the White House are really conflicting. This has appeared to really upset partisans on the Democratic side as well as the Republican side. And has also forced quite a few people to eat their words, talking about how the president believes that no one is above the law and that he would not show special treatment to his son, Hunter. So just to recap, back in June, when the jury was considering Hunter's guilt, he said that he would not pardon him. Then over the weekend, NBC reported that Biden had actually discussed pardoning his son with some of his closest aides following Hunter's June conviction on felony gun charges. And the aides, quote, decided at the time that he would publicly say he would not pardon his son, even though doing so remained on the table, according to NBC News. So then at the same time, the White House press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, was assuring reporters in the White House briefing room that Biden would stand by his vow not to pardon his son. She told the Associated Press reporter Zeke Miller in July that it's still a no. It's still a no. It will be a no. It is a no. And I don't have anything else to add. Will he pardon his son? No. So after all this, Biden, of course, does pardon his son. And now the same White House press secretary is saying that he was being truthful to the American people when he insisted he would not pardon Hunter because he decided to issue the pardon only this weekend, according to Jean-Pierre. So that's what is roiling the Beltway today. And what seems to really bother people is that they're worried that this sets a precedent for President-elect Donald Trump to give blanket pardons to January 6th rioters and protesters in the Capitol who have been targeted and jailed by the Department of Justice. And there has been obviously years of saying that Trump is politically motivated and tries to put himself above the law. This is obviously a case where President Joe Biden is saying that his son is above the law after his conviction, and it has thrown everyone into disarray. So that is your Beltway news. I do want to talk about California too, however, especially since this Thanksgiving weekend brought California and the issue that we've talked about quite a bit of male transgender athletes in women's sports to a forefront. I don't know if you have been following the saga that is the San Jose State University women's volleyball team, but earlier in the season, it came out that one of their players who has been playing on the team since 2022, named Blair Fleming, is in fact born male and is playing as a, quote, transgender woman, has been playing. And this news brought a whole slew of complications to the volleyball season in the Western Mountain Conference. The Western Mountain Conference had passed a transgender inclusion policy to make this a-okay in this division. And the women who were opposing San Jose State, who played against San Jose State, were increasingly worried about their safety. Volleyball is one of those sports where women can get injured playing with men who have much stronger kill shots as they are called, and bring a tremendous amount of additional power to the sport. So women began to forfeit to San Jose State in protest, and this had never happened before. There have been high school girls who have started to forfeit. This was the year that really started. Last year, I remember talking to female athletes, or their parents rather, in high school, whose girls were starting to compete against boys in their sports, and that was not even a thought yet. At that, even just last year, women and girls were too scared to even talk about it here in California. So the wave of forfeitures had started, but never as was seen in this women's volleyball season. So five different teams forfeited to San Jose State, and this kind of just upset the whole system because it automatically pushed San Jose State into a high ranking in this championship tournament, which took place in Las Vegas. The winner is going to go on to the national NCAA championship. So San Jose State notched about six default wins during the season, which put them in second seed in the Las Vegas Mountain West Conference tournament. And then Boise State, which had earlier forfeited to San Jose State during the season, decided to forfeit again, giving up their chance at advancing to the NCAA finals. This was a huge deal because it put San Jose State automatically into the championship final round game to potentially advance to the NCAA finals without even setting foot on the court. First, because of the season forfeitures, which boosted their ranking, and then because of this championship tournament forfeiture. San Jose State did lose that final championship game, so the NCAA will not have to decide how to handle the issue in a championship setting. The NCAA is still facing backlash, and they're dealing with a lawsuit after what happened in the swimming finals in 2022, where swimmer Riley Gaines tied for fifth place. It was an exact tie with transgender swimmer Leah Thomas, and Gaines testified before Congress that she was told she did not get a trophy. The trophy was given to Leah Thomas, and Gaines testified to Congress that she was told by officials that this had to happen for, quote, photo purposes. They wanted Leah Thomas, the transgender swimmer, pictured holding an NCAA trophy. So the NCAA is still dealing with that. And now there is this added controversy with women's volleyball, which they will not have to deal with, at least on the championship stage. But the Mountain West Conference is trying to fend off a lawsuit based on this issue. So 11 female volleyball players, including some of the teammates of the transgender player at San Jose State, and an assistant coach, I think she was an associate head coach, who had earlier filed a Title IX complaint regarding Fleming, saying Blair Fleming is the transgender player, saying that officials and the coach were showing Fleming favoritism over the girls, and it was creating a really toxic atmosphere and ruining camaraderie and just ruining the nature of the team. She filed that complaint. Both the Mountain West Conference looked into it and the university looked into it and said that there was nothing to see there. And then that coach who filed the complaint has been indefinitely suspended. So she joined the lawsuit against the Mountain West Conference, seeking to disqualify the transgender player Blair Fleming from competing in this recent regional tournament. The lawsuit included this emergency petition to disqualify the player. Two courts refused to disqualify him, and so he ended up competing. And there was all obviously the forfeiture that happened. So it was quite the saga, and it adds obviously to an issue that's been increasingly on everyone's radar because it's happening in school sports, high school, middle school. It was very, it was highlighted by the swimmer Leah Thomas, and now it's on team sports. But it seems that the governing sports bodies at some point will have to weigh in on this because this really upset the entire division. I mean, one team automatically notched these 6 wins because of the forfeitures. And the part of the lawsuit was asking the federal courts to cancel the recorded losses, that these forfeitures were recorded as losses. And it, yes, it was a very, it seems that this is coming to a head, but it all is coming down to the courts. And so far, the Supreme Court has yet to weigh in on the issue. There are, you know, state bans that have been put in place in 25 states banning trans-identifying boys from competing in girls' sports. Some of those bans are on hold after the ACLU sued and managed to get them blocked in courts that are friendly or more liberal. And we will see where it goes. But California was definitely on the radar, and I don't think this issue is going to get any easier to solve. It seems to be only getting more complicated the longer this goes on. So that will be interesting. On the state front, California, under Gavin Newsom, is planning to Trump-proof itself as January approaches and Trump's inauguration approaches. And Gavin Newsom has promised to spend quite a bit of money to give agencies more funds to, I guess, block or thwart policies that may come from Trump on electrification, on fossil fuels, on voting, on abortion, whatever else that they claim to expect. It's unclear how much taxpayers will be expected to pay for this effort, but one lawmaker has already proposed a bill to appropriate $25 million in just kind of a slush fund to defend policies ranging from civil rights, climate change, immigration, and abortion access. Meanwhile, so basically, Gavin Newsom convened this special session. It's starting today. We will see more bills coming out. It's really unclear what all we're going to see. Newsom has made it clear that he wants a lot of money in place before year end to prepare for the Trump administration. The last time Trump was in office, California spent heavily. They spent about $42 million in litigation costs in the first Trump administration. That's according to state officials. And this comes, of course, as California is facing yet another budget deficit. We talked about that quite a bit early in the year. Newsom and lawmakers had to head off a very substantial budget crisis, which they did by moving money around, suspending a lot of one-time programs, no real serious fundamental changes to spending habits, just kind of a lot of deferments and kind of short-term policies. So this just a few weeks ago, the the California Budget Watchdog Office said that we're again facing a $2 billion budget deficit, which seems small compared to the $78 billion or whatever it was that we were facing earlier, or facing last year at this time. But they predicted that the shortfalls are just going to grow because, again, there has been no serious reforms to how the state is spending its money, and no really addressing the fact that the tax base is shrinking. The only reason it's just $2 billion this year is because our very wealthiest Californians benefited from the big stock market surge, and so that really brought tax revenue up. But the budget watchdog has pointed out that things are not that different for most Californians. It's really only the wealthy that really saw a bump, and that was from the stock market. So in out years, so 2026 and 2027, it's looking like we're facing $20 billion shortfalls and then a $30 billion shortfall in the second year, 2027. So anyway, so we will see what California can do with all that budget, shortfall. Our state attorney general, Rob Bonta, who is predicted to run for governor, and he definitely seems to be positioning himself as a leader of the resistance. He is he's already unveiled some proposals regarding abortion. He's sponsored two bills, and one would just say that Californians can continue to get access to abortions, including abortion pills, and that manufacturers, those are the drug companies, distributors, and any other person in the abortion supply chain will be shielded from any liability. And then there is another bill that would say that local governments can't try to prevent abortion clinics from being opened in their counties. So those are the Trump-proofing moves underway. We'll see what comes out of the special session, and we'll be reporting on that. Anyway, stay with us. We're about to break for a message from our sponsors, and I'll be back with Morna. Stay with us.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. The White House responding after President Biden's decision to pardon his son, Hunter, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
The president believed enough is enough, and the president took action. And he also believes that they tried to break his son in order to break him.
President Biden previously insisted he would not pardon his son. Hunter Biden faced sentencing over a pair of gun and tax convictions. Many Americans letting their fingers do the shopping as they search for online deals this Cyber Monday.
We're expected to spend $15.7 million per minute online. That according to Adobe. The biggest discounts, electronics, toys, TVs, some clothing stores.
Fox Business Network's Lauren Simonetti. Cyber Monday continues to be the biggest online shopping day of the year. America is listening to Fox News.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Since 1966, Hammond Overhead Door Company has provided residential garage doors that offer more than just a strong and secure way to close your garage. They also add beauty and value to your home. Hammond Overhead Door has the right garage door to complement your home and your budget. Hammond Overhead Door Company. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Boyd's is starting the holiday season with the White Flag Sale. All non-tobacco items flagged will receive 20% discount. That includes the cigar humidors, ashtrays, and other accessories. They have the largest selection of premium cigar gift packs. Shop during the White Flag Sale. There may be plenty of snow in the Sierras, but Boyd's is offering something very special during the holiday season, including a hot cup of spiced apple cider. All available at Boyd's Tobacco and Elegant Gifts, 625 Spring Street in Paso Robles.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Suzanne Luthi, and joining me now is my friend Morna from, I believe, San Diego. Are you with us, Morna?
I'm right here.
Well, welcome back to the show. It's fun to have you.
So happy to be here.
So I wanted to bring you back on because you really dived into a world that most of us do not see, which is the campaign world. And like most of us, you have spent most of your time not in the political realm. So you're kind of a political neophyte. So I would love to learn what you found out about our process and about how all the maneuvers of election politics work in California. So talk a little bit about the campaign you worked on and the results of that campaign.
Okay. All right. So I will say that, and pardon my scratchy voice, I lost my voice a little bit, but I worked on Yvette Corcoran's California Senate campaign, and she was running in San Francisco against Scott Wiener, the most notorious politician in California. And she didn't end up losing, but it was a great campaign. And what I observed was that from Oregon to Mexico, the Democrats are so much more organized, so much more supportive, so much better funded. There's just a lead time on everything they're doing. And this is true, again, Oregon to Mexico, that Republicans just do not get practical support. So there isn't recruiting. There really isn't any 58-county recruiting program. I learned a new word working on Yvette's campaign where I was her campaign manager, so I was super involved, which is down ballot. I don't know, Susanna, I'm sure you knew that, but
yes.
I actually didn't know what that meant. And I would define it as, like, you know, from below the top of the ballot. So city council supervisor, would that be how you'd define it as well?
Yes. Yes. Anything under the top, whoever the top candidates are that everyone is excited to vote for.
Yeah.
And then the rest are the races that most people do not pay attention to, even though they probably affect their lives much
more. So important. They're so important. And that's what I really learned in meeting other candidates in San Francisco, was that the supervisors, the city council, the school board members, the community college board, these individuals sit on boards. They have monthly meetings, sometimes even quarterly, and they shape the policy for a given county or city. So that was really eye-opening for me, because almost everyone I encountered was what I call a candidate of conscience, which means for some reason they had an abundance of space in their life, typically. For some reason, maybe they're empty nesters. Or, like, for instance, you know, Susanna, you know this, but now I'm working on recruiting candidates, and we're trying to recruit young professionals who are AOC's age. But nowadays, it's like one reason people feel called to run is because they hit it out of the park and they bought every boat, they bought every house, they went on every vacation, and now they're like, maybe I should run for office. And it's kind of like a Steve Garvey, Arnold Schwarzenegger thing. And it's not to be, like, dismissive of them running, but we need young people running. So there's no recruiting. There's no practical support if people do run. Like, you don't get an email from the California GOP saying, congratulations on winning your primary. And
really?
There's just no support. It's like, there's no systemic support. I mean, it's so easy to fix. It's so easy to automate these things, to recommend resources. So
what are some practical things that would have really helped a first-time candidate like Yvette? Because it sounds like you had to figure out what you needed on the fly, which is very time consuming.
Totally. It's a twofer. And the second piece is hiring your team, finding a speechwriter you want to work with, picking an email marketing manager, you know, learning how to do X. I mean, these are crazy things. So that's what I call campaign resources. And that's something that we could easily be getting to every candidate who makes it through the primary. And even, you know, creating a database of, okay, you're running in Sacramento. Well, here's a roster of people who have done fundraising for candidates. Here's a roster of people who served as treasurer. Like, there's ways to respectfully get people caught up the way you would if you became the ambassador to the Vatican. There's onboarding. We don't have any onboarding for new candidates. There may be outstanding city-based GOPs, but I just didn't hear, oh, you know, have you ever heard of this county? They have an amazing, you know, GOP.
That was going to be my question. Is this something that is delegated out to regional or city or county parties, or is it supposed to be the state?
I just think when you think about what Donald Trump did, he really came in. The Republican Party never embraced him, right? He's like the son-in-law you never wanted. And I don't think he is, even though he is the Republican president, I don't think the party establishment ever wanted him. And so what the whole MAGA movement was this high energy, highly resourced, like magnetic movement that completely supplanted the GOP and hijacked it. And so while there may be some local GOPs that I don't know about that are sourcing firemen and sourcing school teachers and sourcing lawyers and getting people to run for judge and getting people to run for supervisor and getting people to run for assembly, I have never heard of it, and I've kind of been searching high and low. But so that's the second piece is resources, and then, as I was just mentioning, like recruiting. So we need to have recruiting, and myself and other people are starting to do it. And it's just, I mean, Susanna, I've kind of put your foot to the fire on anyone that, you know, not everyone can do it. There's reasons people can't run, but it's like, if you can't run, be someone's treasurer. Be somebody, you know, host a party. Attend their town hall. Like, and that's what I realized is it's actually really fun working on a campaign, even if you lose. And Democrats are way more engaged. But on a happy note, I've been, I told you, Susanna, I think I told you, have I told you I've been listening to, like, all this, like, Democrat, like, podcasts, like Positive America?
Yes.
Yeah. And they were saying how they spent $250 million paying people $30 an hour to door knock. And the takeaway is that it didn't work in any state.
Which is really, I'm going to interrupt you there, because this was something, so in the lead up to the election, there was a lot of kind of premature gloating on the Democratic side that the Trump campaign was very shabby and kind of using all these unvetted tools. So there's a lot of kind of mockery of the Charlie Kirk phenomenon, who turned out to be very successful. He's kind of, I knew very little about him, but he's made his name of going onto college campuses and debating liberal students from the conservative standpoint. And he launched a big get out the vote movement, which a lot of people were dismissive of because he was pretty much untried, I think. I probably should be checked on that. And then there's also Scott Pressler, who I knew nothing about, who he's just kind of he moved to Pennsylvania and really worked on flipping Pennsylvania. And those two things were really mocked ahead of time. And there was a lot of touting and celebration of the Democrats get out the vote, door knocking, et cetera, as you said, which was very expensive.
You know, it's very expensive. And again, listening to the Bulwark and Pod Save America, they know that didn't work because it failed. But they are reluctant to acknowledge that it's really interesting, they're still pretty dismissive of, like, this is going to surprise you. I'm hearing individual pundits who are still dismissive of, like, Joe Rogan. And I'm like, how can you at this moment question how important that 3-hour podcast was?
Right. That was a hugely important podcast. I couldn't listen to all 3 hours, but when I heard it was going to happen, I had a feeling it was going to be a change moment in media. And so there was this sense that I had to listen to as much of it as I could, because it was a pivotal moment. And I still believe that it was. It turned out to be. And I think that sense was with everyone, because I was, you know, I listened to quite a variety of podcasts, and there was a whole lot of speculation. Will Trump go on? Will Harris go on? What would that mean if they did? And I would say, and even I saw a different side of, I've been, you know, seeing Trump in the political realm for years now as a reporter, but the podcast that he did with the three comedians, Andrew Schultz, and I can't remember the other two. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was Theo Von and Joe Rogan. Is that what you mean?
No, it was the Andrew Schultz podcast first. I can't remember the title of it, but it was just him. He was joking around a lot, and it really kind of humanized, or in media terms, it normalized normalized Trump. And it was, yes, it was. And then there was the Rogan podcast, and that was pretty seismic.
Yeah, you know, they were saying that, and I think that there is a down ballot takeaway, because, you know, we can focus on, you know, the governor and attorney general and, you know, California Senate races, but a huge takeaway of mine is we have to focus on the city you live in, like, run for city council. Like, if you don't have a special needs child, if you aren't living check to check, if you are an American citizen, you don't even need to be an American citizen, actually. We have you can be foreign born and run for Congress. But that's my big thing, is, like, you have to encourage everyone to run. You should flood tickets, because there were so many races where it was one Democrat, like, running for assembly. I mean, I don't know if it was two or three or four, but that's actually a lot of uncontested races. And certainly for, like, mayor and city council and stuff, people just aren't motivated. But back to the podcast, again, like, the really good news is I don't think Democrats, I think they're so disconnected from reality that they just don't, they can't really see their fellow man, and they're angry, and they're not getting the takeaways. And I did hear one guy.
So who are you talking about when you say Democrats? Is it strategists?
Is it people at the Bulwark? There's a small crew of, like, podcasters, like Pod Save America, the Gallup, the New York Times, who interviewed J.D. Vance, and Bulwark, and this one guy, Tim Miller. He was the only one. They were all saying how dumb Trump sounded on Rogan, and they were nitpicking for stuff that they thought was, like, unbecoming. And he said, you know what? I think there were people who were watching, and at the end of it, they're like, that guy's not Hitler. You know what I mean? He saw it through a political lens, that there were people mm-hmm. on the fence who were like, I don't want to vote for Hitler, and I don't want to vote for a Marxist like Kamala. And that was the effect of those podcasts. Was, I think, for the voter who was on the fence, it was proof positive that he just wasn't a monster. He's not a white supremacist monster. And I think that was the big win. Like, right. He said normalizing, but also humanizing.
Right, right. And that phenomenon, it reminded me of pre-2016 when Jimmy Kimmel was accused of quote-unquote normalizing Trump in an interview. Anyway, we are about to break for another message from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks kicking off the new trading month mix, the Dow finishing lower. However, both the NASDAQ and S&P 500 notch record closes. This afternoon, Fed Governor Christopher Waller said he was leaning towards supporting an interest rate cut at the central bank's meeting later this month, though he also said he could be open to arguments for holding rates steady. Tech was the best performing sector today, with Apple hitting an all-time high while energy lagged. And shares of Intel fell 0.5% following a management shakeup. Its CEO Pat Gelsinger is abruptly retiring, ending a nearly four-year run. The Dow winners, Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft. The Dow decliners, Amgen, Goldman Sachs, and Caterpillar. The Dow falling 129 points. The NASDAQ up 186. S&P 500 up 15. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky. Invested in you.
Trump's victory doesn't mean our financial worries are over. Hi, Dr. Ron Paul here. Washington spending addiction still threatens your savings. That's why I recommend gold IRAs from my friends at Birch Gold Group. These accounts protect your retirement from government mismanagement. For a free info kit on gold IRAs, text the word SHELTER to 989898. Don't wait. Text SHELTER to the number 989898 now for your free kit from Birch Gold.
Message and data rates may apply.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
Hey there, glad you could make it. Come on in.
Wow, your kitchen looks amazing. So does your whole house.
Thanks. We just had our cabinets refinished by Peek Painting. They did such a fantastic job, we had them come back and paint our whole living area.
I guess you could say they have your stamp of approval.
Yes, sir. Just like everyone else on Google and Yelp. Booking a quote is easy. Just go to peakpainting.com. That's P-E-E-K painting.com. And book a time and day that fits your schedule. No back and forth phone tag. Just click and book.
Sounds too easy.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peek Painting at peekpainting.com.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and I'm joined by Morna Desmond. I want to change tack a little bit, and then I do want to end up back in California, but I've been thinking, you know, putting this election into context, it is such an interesting time to be alive. It's hard to put, as you were talking about what Trump did with his movement, it's really difficult to keep things in the paradigm of, you know, two rigid parties. And you're seeing this across the world. You know, the most popular world leader today is Nayib Bukele in El Salvador, who has changed his country from one of the most dangerous in the world to one of the safest. And he kind of really tries not to define himself as either right or left, but as common sense. And then you have Javier Milei in Argentina, who's a libertarian and who's been doing what Trump has tasked Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk to do in cutting red tape and bureaucracy. And so you have that vitality in kind of these new things. And then you have kind of the stale, stagnating feeling of the United Nations and the European Commission, which seems to be increasingly bogging its down in more mere bureaucracy, mostly through the whole like green energy movement. And to me, that's really kind of epitomized by the UK right now, where the Labour government is literally jailing people for social media posts, letting immigration run rampant. So it's such an interesting time. And then the United States could have gone the way of the UK. And I think a lot of people did really see this presidential election as a choice between kind of the trying something new and trying to revive freedom, which really seems to have become a dirty word among members of the establishment and the power elite. And so then you have within this country where people voted overwhelmingly for Trump, you have California, which in the United States is kind of the UK. You know, it's really pushing on against First Amendment rights in a number of ways with, really tried to do that during COVID, and certainly trying to double down on unpopular policies like, boundless immigration and, untold regulation and very costly green energy. So in working, obviously you're working on just one campaign, but how do you feel Californians are breaking on these issues? Were you able to get any kind of sense of the pulse of, whether California is going to kind of break out of its model and kind of join the more vital political movements happening?
Well, I'm in the camp that California is breaking and that Donald Trump got more than the official 40% of the popular vote, which is actually shocking. But, there's so much election fraud in other states. I just don't think we're making any effort, whether it's recounts or cleaning up voter rolls. I think that there is various degrees of election fraud from the Mexican border up to Oregon. And so I think there has already been a shift. You can see it when you look at the map. So in terms of how people are breaking, I think what's interesting to connect the kind of conservative movement in California and how it has many like looks. You have, you have gays for Trump. You have people who are independent who voted for Donald Trump. You have people who love RFK. You get these people in a room, they really don't have anything in common. Like, some are eating seed oils, some are not. There's a range of opinions. But I think what they have in common is that they are anti-establishment. And when I think of what's going on in Argentina versus with Bukele and in, the UK, the establishment in one state, like Mexico, is going to be a narco state. That's the establishment. The cartel and the politicians work together and everyone stays rich. And that's a form of oppression. And in the U.S., it's a little different. Our form of oppression is the military-industrial complex, big food, big pharma, and just a corrupt political class that can, basically insider trade the rate of fortunes. So I think that what the common thread is and what we're going to see in California is this incredibly unifying undercurrent of people being anti-establishment. And if we can capture that, instead of trying to have one perfect unifying force, if we can have someone run for governor who's anti-establishment, and if we can have candidates who are anti-establishment more than Republican, because I don't think Republican works, and I'm a Republican. So that's what I think. And you mentioned dirty words, and I think that's a really interesting thing, because it's fascinating to me that for 10 years, I've been told, you know, reading the New York Times or reading the Wall Street Journal, more so New York Times and the Atlantic propaganda and stuff like that. That's what I now consider it. Like, how can we be pro-democracy and anti-populism?
Yeah. Well, and also, how can we be pro-democracy and anti-free speech, anti-questioning, which we really saw during COVID? You really weren't allowed to question, and it was always the party, quote, defending democracy that was not allowing you to question. And I do think this movement, I kind of call it the freedom movement, and I heard that from somewhere, so I did not come up with that on my own, but it is a freedom movement. And as you said, it encompasses so many different people. I first saw it during COVID, because that's when I really kind of broke out of the mold that I felt that I was fitting into as a young, really believed I was liberal, single, living in a city, had really kind of abandoned my roots, like so many of us. And COVID really really woke me up to the fact that A, cutting off your roots is not freedom, and being alone is not freedom. And then just seeing all the propaganda that was happening around COVID, and all of a sudden we were expected to cheer the idea of giving up our civil liberties. And at first I did. And then suddenly I looked around, and kids in, on a very, very, very hot day in a hot city with not many outdoor outlets were not allowed to go swimming. Beaches were closed. You couldn't go canoeing in Virginia. The rafting places were closed. You couldn't do anything. And there was no good reason for it, and no reason even expected to be given. And I think that just started something that's still playing out. And I do believe that 2024 was kind of the first COVID reckoning election. I don't think 2020 was. I think we're still too kind of deep within it to really see how many harms the government could impose on people.
I agree with you. It was a tidal wave. And, you know, listening to you talk just now, it was occurring to me when you mentioned questions. You know, I don't know about you, but, like, I had this experience with amongst my friends and families. I was surprised around all these, like, kind of independent thinkers and conservatives. And anytime I had a question about something, I would get, like, this side glance, like, you're a conspiracy theorist. And it's like, no, I'm American, and I'm a skeptic, and I'm questioning the prevailing narrative. And we have to bring back skepticism, bring back questioning. I don't owe an elected or appointed leader anything at all, much less, like, do I have to automatically trust them? No. And that's another, it's just fascinating to me how the campaign against questioning was so totally effective. And I don't know when that really, what issues that started with, but I mean, you see it with the RFK, like, smears. You know, he's anti-vax. It's like, is he anti-vax?
Right. No, this was definitely a sea change election, and I'm excited to see what you do in California. We are at the end of our hour, so thank you so much for joining me, Morna, and thanks to all you listeners for tuning in. Join us next Monday and every Monday at 1 here on KPRL. Be well.
Free Talk California is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night.
ask about the daily specials. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's